fire season has really transformed. It's extended. Now it's going from April all the we've had forest fires. We had a community evacuate, a Fort Providence evacuated in September. It's supposed to be rainy in the southern part of the territory. So now you have a your fire season really is from April right until the start of October now.
Welcome to the Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I am Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 124, episode 124 of the Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players and stakeholders, the folks that have been pondering the future of how we create, move, trade and use energy, and what the future changes will mean for electricity companies, regulators, society, and customers. I hope these conversations have given you, the listener, a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. My guest on the podcast today is...
Corey Strang, President and CEO, Northwest Territories Power Corporation.
Corey joined me for a chat about Northwest Territories Power Corporation's operations, challenges, and future plans. Corey highlights the need for infrastructure upgrades, including the expansion of the Tolson Hydro Facility, and the opportunity to connect the south and north systems in the territory. We discuss the impacts of climate change on operations and the importance of Indigenous partnerships. Corey also shares his journey from a summer student to CEO, and we close the conversation with his book recommendation. Here is my conversation with Corey Strang, recorded on Zoom in early October 2025. Corey, welcome to the podcast. Good to get you on now.
Glad to be here.
All right. So let's start. Maybe a little bit of background just for the listener on Northwest Territories Power and kind of a thumbnail sketch of the company and kind of the service territory and what it is that you do.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Francis. Yeah, Northwest Territories Power Corporation, it's a crown utility. So we're owned by the government of the Northwest Territories and we're fully integrated, providing full generation, transmission, distribution, retail services. We operate, there's 33 communities in the Northwest Territories with only 45,000 people. Mm-hmm. We operate in pretty much almost all communities. There's another local utility here called Naka Power.
Right.
We're the bigger player in the north, much like the Yukon. Much like the Yukon and what's in Nunavut as well. It power was originally brought to the north by the federal government, and mm-hmm. that was in the late 40s, basically when minerals were found.
Okay, mining. So it was mainly for mining, yeah.
Yeah, so the federal government made a commission and got power up in Yellowknife and in Whitehorse, predominantly because they found gold in Yellowknife, so they had to extract it, and the same thing that happened in Yellowknife. So a lot of our, that's why when I say the Yukon or Nunavut, and we operated in Nunavut until the territory was split between the NDP and Nunavut in 1999. Mm-hmm. So we operated in Nunavut as Northwest Territories Power Corporation, then it was transformed to Killick Energy. Mm-hmm. But so we have a lot of similarities between all three territories. We still had just a really good example. We were just doing some pole replacements at one of our hydro sites, and it still had the Northern Canada Power Commission little tags on it.
NCPC. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it goes, and we have a lot of similarities, a lot of areas, same problems, aging infrastructure, everything needs to be replaced. And it's expensive and affordability and who's going to pay for it, especially if you're a crown and very limited people to bear that cost. Mm-hmm. It's a real challenge. Affordability is a real challenge up here in the north for sure.
Mm. Yeah. And your system, if I remember correctly, cause I was up visiting last summer, you've got the north system and the south system and they're not connected, right?
Yeah, so the best way to describe that is around Great Slave Lake, there's mm-hmm. two separate hydro systems, hydro transmission systems. One serves this product, the city of Yellowknife and surrounding communities, and the other one serves the communities of Hay River, Fort Smith, and Fort Resolution, Enterprise, Hatlo Deche, First Nation. But they're not connected. So there's two separate systems. So if you have lots of water in one, you can't transmit that power to the other system. Yeah. That also means for reliability purposes, if you lose a hydro generation or a transmission line, it's 100% dedicated backup diesel plants in each community.
Right.
And then every community north of that, they're all isolated, standalone, mainly diesel, some natural gas, wind, solar, trying to do more high penetration renewables with battery energy storage systems. That's predominantly the best way you can go there. But lots of conversations with our government, my minister responsible about trying to reduce our reliance on diesel. Diesel has traditionally been very, very reliable. Mm-hmm. Diesel engines, they work. The other interesting thing in the NABT, there is mines, diamond mines operating, which are now at end of life, but all of them are in parts of the territory which are not close to our existing infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So they all produce their own power. They actually produce more power than what I do entirely in a year.
Wow.
They are 50% more generation than what we would do for every other community in the Northwest Territories.
Right.
But they're just in an area that wasn't to build a transmission infrastructure to it was really expensive. Yeah. So there the diamond mines are at end of life. So the territory right now is trying to transform itself, which why when we're talking about the big federal projects and things that we're trying to do, mm-hmm. We're really trying to work with the federal government on trying to transform the North. And all three territories are all facing the same circumstance. So it's a very interesting way of how we try to keep the lights on and mm-hmm. the business that we're doing, because we are not connected. We're basically islanded by ourselves, and then we're further islanded because all of our systems are not connected either.
Yeah.
So it's not a very efficient way to run a utility, mm-hmm. meaning if you have backup, customers need to pay for that backup, right. But sometimes hopefully it doesn't have to be used, but then you need it when it's 40 below and you might lose a transmission line. You might have an issue go on with a breaker or something. That would happen, and unfortunately in the industry, and then you have to provide that power. So there is a lot of investment that customers pay for that probably isn't the best use of money. So that's a challenge because you're not connected.
Yeah, and you got a limited number of customers that are rate payers, right? So it's spread across a small population.
Small population and not a lot of industry to spread that over either.
Yeah.
So they're like I mentioned, all of our infrastructure and people, I mean, you have to, I like the history because you need to remind people of that. And the only reason why there is hydro in the Northwest Territories or Yukon for that matter is because of industry. The federal government just did it. There wasn't consultation.
Right.
Not saying that was a sign of the times, not being critical of what was done in the 40s, 50s and 60s, but there wasn't. And that's definitely something that we work very, very closely with our Indigenous partners on, is trying to advance that energy aspect, what they want to do on their land and in their community.
Yeah,
that process has changed tremendously. And that's the only way that you will move forward. And that's something that I'm very passionate about and a big advocate for. Mm-hmm. And our government is that way as well, having bilateral meetings with Indigenous governments all in the same playing field, trying to work together, consulting with the federal government on what we can do for the North. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't have the hydro if it wasn't for industry. Right now we're trying to work with some junior miners, trying to get them started for critical minerals and everything else that's needed in the world, and trying to see if that would help lower the cost for the average consumer. Because mm-hmm. Right now with inflation, maybe 2-3% a year, sales are flat. Sales aren't increasing. So
Yeah,
only one way for rates to go, and that's
right. Yeah, yeah. You know, when you talk about the history, so presumably that plant that I had the pleasure of visiting last year with you on Snare River, that was originally built for what, the gold mines up there?
Yeah, Snare Rapids. That was built in 1948.
Yeah.
So and a lot of other older utility, and Yukon's going through the same thing. right now they have a lot of aging infrastructure that needs to be end of life and needs to be replaced, and it's expensive, and we're going through it right now as well. So that was the original plant and dam built to provide power for gold mining. And now the gold mining is that is no longer being done. So now it's just providing power to the city of Yellowknife and surrounding communities. But it's one transmission. It's one main transmission line in. So your redundancy, you don't have what the Southern Canada has for reliability by having very, very large generation sites of 600, 1,000 megawatts, and then the reliability of your grid. There is no grid. One transmission line. So if you have an issue with that transmission line, there will be no power for the capital city of the Northwest Territories. And that's why you have your backup generation and diesel.
Hey, one of the things, Corey, I ask folks when they come on the podcast is about their journey. So, you know, I'd be interested to get a sense of what your journey was when you were a kid growing up in Hay River, was it?
I was born in Hay River.
You're the first president and CEO of the company that's from Northwest Territories, right?
I'm the first. I'm the first person that's president and CEO from. I was born in Hay River. I'm Métis descent as well, so I'm the first Indigenous president and CEO. I was a summer student. Started as in 1998 as a summer student.
Now I'm
the CEO of your organization. So.
How did you get from being a summer student to like what was the pathway?
Yeah, the one thing I say about the North is the North has tremendous advantages in that you can be the breadth and the depth of the items that you're working on is tremendous.
Yeah.
It's good and bad because you got to be able to deal with it, and you got to be able to keep. I have a running joke that you got to keep your breathe holes above water because you're just dealing with so much stuff. But that offers so much opportunity to learn and to engage. So luckily, I had some good mentors that allowed me to make mistakes and allowed me and pick me up and dust me off and allowed me to be successful that way. And is now my board chair, Judy Goucher, is now chair of Northwest Territories Hydro Corporation and Northwest Territories Power Corporation. She was tremendous in my development You know, we are a small company. We only have just north of 200 employees. So you do have, it's a flat organization, and that does allow one-on-ones with the president and CEO. So I try to do that and how I handle myself and my staff and my customers. And you do have that ability to be connected. Sometimes it's a little much because everyone knows you. So if something goes wrong, your phone goes off pretty quick. But that is one of the advantages of being a fairly flat and small organization.
Yeah. And that's something that that one of the other presidents of one of the northern companies years ago mentioned to me as well, that the fact that you know, that you're in these smaller communities, you're an important part of the community and everybody knows you. So when you're in the at the grocery store, people will talk to you about the power company.
Yeah, and it's the same of all of our other small communities. I was up in Tuktoyaktuk, which is right in the Beaufort Sea, and our plant superintendent there had good stories with him. It's very, very windy, and you can imagine there's which impacts our 100 kilometer hour winds, and you know that's near hurricane level, so it would have some outages, and he would be sleeping in the power plant, ready to respond quickly if restore power as quickly as he can. And so in our small communities, if you're the plant superintendent, everybody knows you and everybody knows when there's an issue. It's very easy in today's society to know when there's a problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, let's circle back. You know, you talked about aging infrastructure, and I know it's the Tolson plant that has just undergone a pretty significant rebuild again, because the infrastructure was getting old. What was that experience like? And what, it was out for 2 years or close to 2 years?
It was out, and it's still out.
And it's out again, right?
Yeah. Well, because we did it's a single plant. So it's it was an 18 megawatt Francis turbine,
right?
One single runner, and it was at the end of life. So it changed, mechanical upgrades on a new runner and a new generator. And it's isolated. There's no road. So to get to it, you got to build a winter road. That's not cheap to transport all your heavy equipment there. So That went through, and that took two. That was only scheduled for 6 months, and it just took over 2 years because of problems that happened. We commissioned it just in end of March of this year, and one of the other components of that particular asset is it's a big surge tank that
The surge tank, right? Yeah,
dam to the hydro unit. That was again 1965's vintage. We knew that it was old and eventually needed to be replaced. So we did some we've done engineering inspections, but they're all more visual inspections. We didn't do the non-destructive testing, and the results came back. We just did that during our shutdown period. The results came back far worse than we anticipated, meaning it was at risk of failure and lives, environment. It would be a catastrophic event if that occurred. So in I mentioned the Yukon, they were going through a very, very similar situation with one of their surge tanks, same vintage. So we're doing it's shut down again right now, but we're doing a fairly quick betterment on it to make sure it can work. Because if not, we're running on diesel right now in three communities.
Yeah. It's
really expensive to do that because we don't have the connection to our other hydro system. Mm-hmm. So we want to get that done in the next month. And then we have a plan to replace that surge tank in 3 years when we have to replace our substation as well. Because that's all the transformers there, a 1965 vintage. So that needs to be upgraded, and they all have to be transported by winter road. And it's major upgrades to that facility. It just needs it. And it's worked really well. And that's something that I try to tell customers from 1965 all the way up to 2020, that thing just worked and it provided some relatively low cost power for customers, low cost relative to us. I won't say that to Quebec Hydro or Manitoba Hydro.
Right.
But it worked really, really well. And it's just time for upgrades, and it's expensive. So it's a challenge to have that conversation with our customers for sure.
And it's also the one of the projects that the premier's been in Ottawa. I think this week the premier was in Ottawa talking about the possibility of looking at moving this from 18 megawatts to 60 megawatts.
It's the nice thing about Tolleston, and that's where we have a partnership. Our government has a partnership with our Indigenous partners to do an expansion. So it would be another powerhouse north of the existing one for a 230 megawatt runners, so a total of 60 megawatt capacity. When then with the transmission connection to the Yellowknife grid, which then once you get that extra connectivity, then you have your increased reliability. You have or green energy that you can then change the way that you're trying to do things now, or perhaps more electric heat, more industrial process items on that nature. But it's really expensive. And the nice thing about it is there is no more environmental damage. You don't need to change your dams or anything. You can use all the existing infrastructure that was there.
Okay.
So it's not another dam. It's all the existing watershed. And it's a project that we've been working on for a long time. It was 20 years ago when it's been known since the 60s when they built it, but the water capacity, it is the biggest reservoir that we have in the Northwest Territories is on the Tolleston system. So there's a lot of capacity there. It's just a matter of trying to make the economics work, which is a challenge when you have 45,000 people.
Yeah. 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 Cause this plant, the full cost of putting 60 additional megawatts plus the transmission has got to be north of a couple of billion.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
It's expensive, especially, I mean, as utilities, we're all chasing the same thing. We're all trying to electrify. We're all trying to hire the same power line technicians. We're all trying to get the same transformers. So the pricing on everything is just through the roof on a lot of things that we're seeing, and supply chain challenges and it's not just in time inventory anymore. You have to plan and you have to have it. So that's a challenge too, that we're all searching for the same thing, all utilities across North America. So, it is, but I mean, it's the only way forward. I mean, the systems we have now are the same designs upgraded with all new controls and SCADA and things like that, but it's the same fundamental design that we've had for the last 70 years, last 50 years, hasn't changed. If you want to move forward, you need to connect the grids, and then you can have a conversation about what your next phase is, because if not, We do have excess hydro, for example, in both our systems. But if you lose your hydro or lose your transmission, to provide power, you need 100% diesel backup.
Yeah.
So that means you might have to invest in a $50 million LNG or diesel plant that might run a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Customers pay for that. That's not a good use of their money.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that's kind of the challenge that we're having about making sure that the grid connection is very important to me. It's something that we're striving for. My minister, who's the deputy premier, she's very passionate about it. So it's something that we're all striving for here in the North, is trying to get us through that next level. If not, I'm telling you what the future is going to be. And I've said this publicly before, Francis, and I'll say it again, 2 or 3% annual inflation with flat sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
Percent rate increase every year.
Yeah.
That's not even trying to replace the assets that need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So right. That's we're trying to do that. We're trying to grow the North. And it's a tough challenge. Sometimes it is overwhelming for sure, but it's something that we're all working together to try to get us, because if not, we know what the future is going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So in an ideal world, I'm just trying to figure out what the different components are. An additional powerhouse on that existing system, that existing infrastructure, give you 60 megawatts more. Connecting that then to the North Great Slave system, that transmission, I've seen two different options. One of them is following the road. Another one is a submarine cable through Great Slave Lake. I guess there's pros and cons for both of those, right? One of them shorter but more complex.
Absolutely. And then you have to, and that's a conversation that we've had a lot. Yes, the submarine cable is definitely a shorter distance and less capital cost, harder to maintain from an operational standpoint. And then obviously a transmission line going around Great Slave Lake is a lot more expensive because it's longer distance. Yeah. But it's right along the highway system, so the right of way is easier, and operations for maintenance and repair and vegetation management would be easier. But the capital cost is extensive, so that's one of the things that we're working with the government on, is just the routing of that particular transmission infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the other potential components of a project in an ideal world would then be a connection either into Alberta or Saskatchewan, right?
Yeah, and we've had conversations with both governments on that particular item. One would be mainly because Tolson is just, it really is just a stone's throw across the border. It's on the southern part of the territory. It's so then getting into a grid connection into, say, Fort McMurray area, mm-hmm. isn't that particularly far. And plus it's hydro, so it's clean, it's green. Again, I said there's no, Tolson doesn't need more flooding. It's, so that's a very a benefit that is very attractive to folks, especially as we still I think it's still important to fight climate change fight, because I don't think any, especially here in the North where it's so visual for forest fires and floods that we've been dealing with the last 3 or 4 years, we see it daily. So it is important to reduce our reliance on carbon emitting generation sources for sure.
Yeah. Well, and when we went up to visit the Snare Rapids, we flew over the territory, and the visual evidence of the challenges that we're facing from a climate perspective are very evident when you fly over the territory.
Yeah, this year we don't call it summer anymore; we call it evacuation season.
It's
gotten to that point. Even this year, we were doing quite well. It was a cooler summer, and you learn from things. And even our own staff, we rivers break up in the southern part of the territory in early April, and we have some low-lying communities, so we prepare for that. We prepare for potential flooding, and we have equipment that we manage and go around our little powerhouses that we have and things of that nature. And then 2 weeks later, we're deploying sprinklers, because then it's gone. Fire season has really transformed. It's extended. Now it's going from April. We've had forest fires. We had a community evacuated, Fort Providence evacuated in September.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be rainy in the southern part of the territory in September. It's extended. So now you have your fire season really is from April right until the start of October now. That
wow.
wasn't there 5 years ago, 4 years right. ago. So it's just a new reality that we have to live with. And as an organization, I think we're doing really well with it and coordinating well with the forest fire efforts, fighting efforts and things of that nature. I chuckle a little bit to myself. It's good and bad. I'm very, very proud of how the work the teams are doing to combat it. I also say, my goodness, like, this is our new reality. Mm-hmm. That our construction window in the north really is only 6 months. That's the time that you have to do your capital and your planned maintenance, not only which is hard to do in a 6 month period.
Right.
Not only that is a hard and best of times. Now we're planning that on top of, okay, now we have to be prepared for wildfires. We have to be prepared for flooding. And it's just an added strain onto existing human resources in our systems that we have. Mm-hmm. So it's just a new reality that we're adapting to it because we have to. It's just sometimes I'm just a little, it's a little sad to be quite frank that now this is our new reality, but we are adapting to it because we need to. So I'm proud of the teams for doing that. It's just an added strain and on everyone that you didn't have. Say there's always forest fires up here in the north. It's always been there. We're in a wilderness area for sure. It's just now it seems to be more extreme.
Yeah.
Just like the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you say you've got a construction season that's probably about 6 months, so that's now basically the same as fire season?
Like normally, you know, your capital and your project engineers and your maintenance side, you would plan for all your major work to be done in the summer, spring, shoulder seasons, fall seasons. And now at the same time, you also have to, on top of that, plan for wildfire and flood seasons at the same time. So, yeah. And you're trying to do that. You're asking your staff to do that with the existing resources they have. Because if not, then you're adding more resources to the cost, which is going to increase rates.
Yeah.
So from a human resource perspective, it is tremendous on, you know, mental health is very important to staff. And so it's just an added complexity that we didn't really have 4 or 5 years ago that we do now have built into a lot of our emergency management systems. So I'm proud of that. It's just a little unfortunate that we've had to adapt that way, but it is reality and we are adapting to it.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that for some projects, when there's not a road, you've got to use winter roads to get stuff in. So I guess that's the other side of the calendar as well. So that's got to be complex in terms of figuring out how to get your equipment into Tahltson, for example, in winter, and then do the build during the summer.
Yeah, so both of our hydro sites that we have are only accessible either by in the summertime by plane,
yeah,
or in the wintertime you can get there by plane, of course. But we also build winter roads to them, and that's over ice and over land when the ground freezes. In Tahltson and Snare, we build an annual winter road every year. Mm-hmm. We also have another hydro facility called Bluefish, which is pretty about 40 kilometers outside of the city of Yellowknife. It's a smaller facility, but only accessible by road. So if you're going to do anything big, you need to build a winter road. And then so the supply chain and logistical challenges are tremendous. And then you can have a warm winter. It's not guaranteed that you're always going to be able to have the same season to get your stuff to the site. The diamond mines experience this all the time because they have there's a road that goes up to the diamond mines that build every year and maintain it to get their items in. And you have a short window. And if you don't get it in, then you're looking at flying it in with heavy lift helicopters, which is extremely expensive.
Right.
So it is very important. So the planning mechanism is extremely important of every project that we do up here. Mm-hmm.
So, but speaking of the complexity of getting projects built, how difficult is it to get people and the right skill set for folks to be able to do the work for Northwest Territories Power?
It's one of our top risks for sure.
Yeah, right?
Human resources is very challenging, and COVID, of course, as the world has just exemplified that. It seems that. In my opinion, I think the boomers, they did a lot more work than I think people give them credit for, to be quite honest. And not only that, but I think just the workforce expectations have changed. There isn't as much with employees. There isn't as much. as a CEO, I don't really use the phrase work-life balance, because there shouldn't be an expectation of that. It is one thing, and I think for most people in the seat, they understand that, and I understood that when I took the position. But there is definitely more of an expectation in our next generation of workers that want to come out. They want to have more time with their friends and families and things for their own. It's yeah. not all about, you know, 60 to 80 hour work week, and that's what you do. And that was, so that's a changing expectation with our staff members. So it is a hard to find the skill set, but it's important. And I'm a product of it. I'm a homegrown person. So I'm a big advocate of trying to find the people with the demeanor that want to live in the North, because not everyone does want to live in the North. I'm from here, so it's easy. My family's here. My mm-hmm. wife's family is here, so it's easy for us. But for attracting the skill set and the ability to come in here, and where it's, you will be isolated. Hay River, I'm in Hay River, which is a small community. My drive to work is 3 to 5 minutes, which is great. I go home for lunch every lunch, which is awesome. But it is the winter, it is cold. There are certain things you just really want to make sure when you're trying to attract good talent, that to be very honest with folks on both sides, like there's positives and there's negatives, and be really upfront about what it is, because it doesn't do anybody good if you get someone in here with a good skill set and they can do some change and they're willing to work, but they're like, oh my goodness, I didn't think it'd be dark at 4 o'clock on November. It's going to be dark for a lot of times.
Right.
Just the reality of it, but there's a lot of attractiveness to it too. So I preach that pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, one of the things you said earlier, you talked about communities that are not connected to the system in the North, and they have different types of generation providing. You mentioned natural gas. Where do you have natural gas in your remote system? Is that up Tuktoyaktuk or somewhere near where they're doing the extraction?
Yeah, it's up in the Beaufort. So Inuvik right now, we do have liquid natural gas, which had a gas well that was developed in the late 90s that had a gas well there, which was very, very pure gas. And they're trying to do another one called M18 with the Nuvialuit Regional Corporation, which is just north of Inuvik. So that's an exciting opportunity that we can partner with Indigenous governments, that it's energy on their land and what they want to do. So we're really excited about both those opportunities. So there is that aspect. So, but again, it's the consultation phase. It's just meeting with communities and meeting with Indigenous governments and having a good conversation about, okay, here's what the future has. What do you want to do? What can you do? And certain other communities have hydro. There's a ton of sun in the summertime up here. It's sunny all the time, but storage, you need to store it somehow. So that's how the battery energy storage systems, and you have to have your control system set in place to manage it. And that's what we're doing in our community of Inuvik with solar and wind and renewables. And we want to expand that more, but we have seen some good benefits of reduced diesel consumption and also gas consumption too in it because of the renewables that we have. But you need to be careful about it, because it is minus 40. You got to keep the lights on, and my phone's going to ring pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So we are a little risk. Utilities are traditionally a little risk averse when it comes to that, for the reliability standpoint. It's very important. So that's, again, a communication and a conversation that needs to happen with folks about, why can't you just put so much solar on the system? Well, you're going to have grid instability then. Mm-hmm. And the Yukon seeing that too right now, with too much solar sometimes in the winter. Mm-hmm. So it's there's case studies around it. It's not, Bermuda is the same thing. Like any islanded system where you don't have a grid for some place for the electrons to go, you're going to have that. So we're not unique in that side. And we can learn from other people's experience, so we hopefully don't do the same issues that might be a complex in another jurisdiction.
Right. All right. Well, listen, Corey, I always end the podcast with a question about a book recommendation. And so we gather all of these book recommendations together. We put them on our Flux Capacitor Book Club list. And it also, more so than not, adds to my own reading list. So what book would you recommend to the listener and that we will add to our book list?
I have a book that I've been reading. It's called Your Oxygen Mask First. It's by an author, Kevin Lawrence, about 17 habits to help high achievers survive and thrive in your leadership life. I like that one because it helped me a little bit understand about trying not. I talked a little bit earlier about keeping your breathe holes above water, especially when the role you're in the role and you're passionate about what you do, it can be overwhelming, and it can be where burnout comes quick and you're overwhelmed and you essentially quit. So this book has helped a little bit on just some techniques and help for myself and how I can make sure that I can have that so-called balance, which I'm not a believer in. I'm not a big believer in work-life balance. I think if you're passionate about something, want to achieve at things, I use a lot of sports analogies, like Michael Jordan. There's no such thing for him. Anyone that wants to achieve, Connor McDavid, they work hard. They're good at what they have some talent, but they get to where they are. And Sidney Crosby, things like that, because they work their asses off and they work extremely hard at their craft. So this book, anyways, has helped me out a little bit to try to find that little bit of that balance so I don't get overwhelmed and just get burnt out too much.
Okay, great recommendation. So we will add Your Oxygen Mask First, 17 Habits to Help High Achievers Survive and Thrive in Leadership and Life. And it's by Kevin N. Lawrence. So added to the reading list. Great recommendation. Thank you, Corey. And Corey, thanks for joining the podcast. Always great to catch up, but this was an interesting chat. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Francis, and I look forward to see you in a month's time. I think we're going to.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We'll get together for the board meeting and the Powering Partnerships event, and look forward to it.
Great. Thanks a lot. Good to see you again.
Cheers. Bye.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning, and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me on Instagram as the Brad Bradley, on Blue Sky as @FrancisBradley, on LinkedIn, and through our website at electricity.ca. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 124. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Corey's recommendation, Your Oxygen Mask First, 17 Habits to Help High Achievers Survive and Thrive in Leadership and Life by Kevin N. Lawrence. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.